When it's cold and damp and the days are short, it's easy to think of fire season as a long way off. If the winter goes on, cool and wet, it might be. But rather than make an assumption, the Oregon Department of Forestry is making moves to reduce the possibility of wildfires spreading when that season comes. ODF offers fire hazard fuel reduction grants for rural landowners in parts of Jackson County. Let's talk about those grants and how they're accessed. Derek Price is a forest officer with ODF and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Derek, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
I understand you're a firefighter yourself. I mean, do you often see evidence in fire season of places that probably could have used some fuel reduction work before the season started?
Absolutely. Typically, if you're going to have a good, hot, heavy fire, you have to have the heavy fuels. And these projects are designed to mitigate the heavy fuel loading and reduce the fire activity. We can't stop every fire from happening, unfortunately, but we just want to affect how it's going to burn if it does occur.
And so what are the major fuels that cause you concern?
Really, it could be just about anything, but when you're talking about defensible space, juniper is one. It doesn't take much to get it going. Seems like a lot of people have planted it around their house, and it burns extremely hot. It's extremely volatile fuel. Some of the buck brush or deer brush, as it's known, manzanita, some of those type fuels burn extremely hot, and it doesn't really take a whole lot to get them going.
So it's less about the larger diameter kinds of things than just the brushy things. Those are the ones that kind of burn like leaves, it sounds like.
Hotter than leaves. You mentioned the large diameter stuff. Typically, the large diameter, mature, healthy trees around the structures, we typically want those left. They do kind of create a little bit of a screen effect from all the embers and the firebrands and the burning match heads flying through the air if there is a wildfire, and kind of, like I said, create a little screen effect to keep those burning match heads from landing at the house and starting fires right at the structure itself.
That's a very descriptive phrase, but it sounds like it's probably pretty close to the truth, burning match heads flying through the air.
Yeah, I mean, there's videos and pictures and all kinds of things available that we have. It really does paint a picture. I mean, if you imagine a million burning match heads being thrown at your house, and that's kind of the situation that we deal with often in a fire in the wildland-urban interface.
That kind of brings the whole thing right home to thinking about what you're trying to remove here. So what kinds of fuel treatments, then, are best done?
Well, there's really a few different ways to look at it. When you're dealing with a structure, whether it's a business, a garage, a residence, typically that first 1 to 5 feet or 1 to 3 feet or so, you want to make sure that you have the leaves and needle accumulation taken care of, and that's in your gutters, that's under your decks, under your steps, anywhere that one of those burning match heads can land and start a fire right next to the structure. You're going to want to make sure you're dealing with that stuff. And then you're out in that 5 to 10 foot range, and you want to make sure your grass is kept short and you don't have fuel that's going to carry a fire directly to the house. And then you get out in the 30 to 100 foot range, and that's where you want to make sure that you have your grass kept short, your trees have nice healthy spacing, your branches are pruned up to the right height. Every property is different, and there are ways to take what the landowners want. Some people want it a little bit more of a natural setting, and some people want a little bit more park-like. And there are ways to design each of these projects to really reduce the fire hazard, make it safer, make it healthier, and also make it livable for the landowners.
We're talking to Derek Price of the Oregon Department of Forestry about fire hazard fuel reduction grants from ODF. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 around the region, or jx@jeffnet.org. Curious about what you're talking about, the differences here, natural versus park-like. I mean, can you somewhat mimic nature, not make it look too tampered with, and yet still do accomplish the goals of the fuel reduction?
Yeah, it really comes down to planning. With modern construction these days, you can realistically have a fairly hot, intense fire within 30, 40 feet of the structure, and oftentimes the structure itself will withstand that much heat. A person, it's not going to work, but a structure should withstand that. What it can't withstand is all those little fires starting right next to the structure itself. So that's why there's always going to be a give and take and ebb and flow. And if you're wanting a little bit more natural, you might have to be a little bit more aggressive in doing the stuff right up close to your house.
It's interesting. So you really need to kind of look at this with a set of eyes as if, okay, if I'm going to throw a match right here.
And that's a term that I use a lot with folks when I'm doing these home assessments, mm-hmm. is imagine 100,000 burning match heads thrown at your house. And I also walk around the outside of these structures and say, okay, what would happen if a match had landed right here or right here? And there's places where the answer is nothing. It would land in the green grass and nothing would happen. It might even land on a wooden porch and nothing would happen. But if it gets up under the deck and that pile of leaves and needles up under the porch, it's going to start the little fire, and then it's going to spread to the steps, and then it's going to spread to the deck, and then it's going to spread to the house. There's different ways to look at it. There really is.
I know that one of the concerns that arises when people talk about the defensible space and just trying to remove potential fire fuels, there is always a concern, it seems like, about whether there's going to be any shade left around the house. I mean, how close can you have trees to the house? Good mature trees.
You can have them within feet of the house. You typically don't want them hanging over your roof line or close to your chimneys or those type of things. But we do recommend people keeping their large, healthy, mature trees even a couple feet from the house. There's nothing wrong with that. What they do create is all the needle cast or the leaf fallout, all that accumulation that sits right down next to the house. That's where the fire hazard is. The large, healthy, mature trees, like I said, they kind of create a little bit of a screen effect. So you kind of have to imagine that million burning match heads thrown at your house, and if these trees catch 40 or 50% of them, that's 40 or 50% less match heads landing at your house. And even if they land up in a big mossy oak tree or something and start some moss on fire 30 or 40 feet up in a tree, that's not really a huge concern. It'd be like you or I climbing a big oak tree and holding a Bic lighter. It really doesn't pose much risk to the structure itself. As long as you have the branches pruned up on the trees to 8 feet or so, that's usually fine. You want nice healthy spacing between your trees. You don't want super, super tight canopies because it's not healthy for the trees and it's not safe. So if you get a nice healthy spacing to where the tops of the trees are just barely touching and you can see through on the ground and you can walk through pretty easy, then you're in pretty good shape as far as the spacing and dimensions of the trees. And
interesting. So the trees themselves really aren't that good at fuel, and particularly in the moss example you gave it, you know, the trees are going to get all scorching, but they're going to survive.
Yeah, typically. And they're going to survive as long as you've done the other things around it. If you have a house and then right next to it a bunch of nice, healthy, mature trees, that's fine, as long as you don't have 8 acres of manzanita or buckbrush just adjacent to those trees. Because then you're going to have the hot, heavy, intense fire moving through those other fuels directly leading into the trees, and then there's potential for the trees to be on fire right next to the house, and that's almost worst-case scenario. So if you want to keep those trees, you might have to do a little bit more work around them, or make sure that the trees adjacent to those first set of trees are nice and healthy and spaced and pruned up and those type things. It's really just kind of a ripple effect. You throw a pebble in a pond and you kind of see that ripple effect moving out. It's kind of the same aspect as wildfire. You just kind of want to look at the house itself and then just incrementally work your way out.
Yeah, okay, so start at the house and then kind of step away from it bit by bit and see mm-hmm. what you've done to protect it. So when you talk about the trees, we're talking about removing the lower branches generally. Would I hear you say up to 8 feet, basically?
Yeah, I mean, there's publications out there that say 15 feet or something like that. And for the most part, what I found is what can easily be reached with a chainsaw is really about all you have to do. The only time you really have to get up really high with like a pole saw or something, there's a few types of trees that you might have a branch come off a tree at 15 or 18 feet up, but it comes out and it hangs right down to the ground. So if there's any ground fire, even if it's low intensity ground fire, there's potential for that fire to get up in the branch and grow vertically and get up into the trees. So basically by pruning up to that 6 or 8 feet or so, you're separating the ground fuels, whether that's grass or leaves or whatever it is, from the aerial fuels. The trees, the branches and the trees and all that type of stuff.
All right, so we're talking about the practices now. I haven't really gotten into the whole grant program part of this. So who is eligible for grants to help some of this fuel reduction work?
This year we have two separate grants, and they're kind of in the same general geographic location, basically from Talent to Jacksonville, kind of on that west side of the valley. So that would include Wagner Creek, Anderson Creeks, Pioneer, Coleman, it's like Griffin Creek, South Stage, kind of that area, and then Middle Applegate, basically from Jacksonville to Provolt,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of the sub roads off that, like Forest Creek and Sterling Creek, and a little bit in Upper Applegate, China Gulch. A lot of the Applegate Valley would be included.
Derek Price, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a forest officer with the Oregon Department of Forestry, ODF. We're talking about fire hazard fuel reduction grants available for parts of Jackson County at the moment. Join us on the Exchange with your questions or comments, 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So how do people get into the grants, and what are some of the requirements for them?
Basically, there's not much... there's not a whole lot of red tape. It's not a typical government program. Basically, people let me know they're interested. I set up a time with them directly, come out, meet them, walk through their property, make suggestions, answer their questions, and really explain to them why I'm looking at it this way. So I've been in the fire service for 17 years now. So I look at things from a firefighter's perspective, but I also look at it from a forest health perspective and take the landowners' accounts into play. So I kind of go through all that with them, get as detailed as I need to. If we come up to an agreement on a project, we put it in writing, just takes a couple minutes to fill out the contract, and then the landowner is responsible for having the work done. Whether they do it themselves or they hire it out, doesn't really concern me who actually does the work. Once the project is complete, I come back out, check it, make sure everything looks right, and then a month or so after that, they get the check in the mail.
So the landowner could do the work themselves and essentially get paid for their time.
Yep. And what I always tell the landowners is I prefer when the landowners are able to do it hands-on because they can really make it the way that they want to. I usually tell people it's nothing that's going to make them rich. It's going to pay for their sawgas and maybe a new chain or two and pay themselves a buck or two an hour. I mean, it's certainly not a lucrative deal, mm-hmm. but it's better than nothing.
So do you, Derek, do you set the price on what it's worth?
We pay $500 per acre of work.
Mm-hmm.
So an acre is 208 feet by 208 feet. If there's a heavy fuel load in that acre, we pay $500. Again, it's paid on a rebate basis.
Mm-hmm.
If there's some areas that are a little bit more sparse and don't need a whole lot of work, I might stretch that out. I might have somebody do an acre and a half's worth of area,
mm-hmm.
to pay them that $500. Because again, we pay for acres of work, not acres of area. Does that make sense?
Acres of work. Okay, not acre. I got it. Okay, so yeah, if you're just going to treat half an acre, that just counts as half an acre.
Right.
With it. Well, okay. And is there a cap per landowner or anything like that?
There's nothing in writing that says this is the max amount you can get,
mm-hmm.
but we have a finite amount of money, and we try to spread that over the biggest area possible.
Mm-hmm.
So typically in the first couple years that we have a budget available,
mm-hmm.
we're a little bit more, I don't want to say stingy, but we keep the money a little bit closer.
Uh-huh.
So we might do 2 acres for this person. They complete the project. We might come back and do another 2 acres. That way we can kind of spread it out over the biggest area possible.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of the project, once the budget is close to expiring, and mm-hmm. if I still have money available, that's when we get to be a little bit more generous and we offer the 10, the 15, the 20-acre projects, just because we want to make sure that money is actually getting utilized on the ground and not get sent back.
And since you're getting close to the end of the biennium, I mean, you're 6 months away from it, basically. Is this the position you're in now?
No. These grants work independent of state budget cycle.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a pot of money. When it gets awarded, we have typically 2 or 3 years to mm-hmm. spend it. It just depends on the particular grant itself.
So I guess the question is whether you're in the stingy end or whether you're in the generous end.
We're more on the stingy end at this, stingy end at this point. That doesn't mean we're not going to give the money out. We're just typically we're not going to be doing the larger scale projects.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody has just that right prime piece that it absolutely makes sense and multiple landowners are going to get benefit out of it, as well as adjacent federal land or lots of structures going to be defended with it, and mm-hmm. they're willing to do it, we do still look at larger scale projects.
All right, we have time for one quick call. Here's Tim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Derek Price in Oregon Department of Forestry.
One thing I always ask people to remember, that's when they have a mower come in and mow down on a huge spot of overgrown weeds, 18, 20 inches tall, but nobody breaks it up. Little spark, boom, you've got something that's been smoldering down under that 8 or 10 inches of mowed stuff for quite a while. We've had a couple and blowdown stuff. People don't clean it up, and later a spark from something hitting a rock or whatever.
All right, good question. Good point. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Derek, ring a bell with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's potential for stuff to sit and smolder, and you're not going to see it for a while, and it makes it a little bit more difficult. You get that the grasses and weeds and all that type of stuff that lays over. It kind of creates a little bit of a cap effect. So you know there's fire under there, and you spray your hose at it, you're not really putting water on the fire itself. So you really got to be doing your due diligence and stirring stuff up and breaking it up. One thing I want to add to that, though, is once that stuff is cut and down, it's better than standing and live.
Oh, okay.
If you have a foot of tall grass, you're going to get 6 or 8 feet of flame off of it. If you have 3 inches of grass, you're going to get 8 or 10 inches of flame off of it.
So, Derek, should people contact their local forestry office to see if there are grants available elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Derek Price is with the Oregon Department of Forestry based in Central Point. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.